You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Kings of Anglia podcast on this Monday morning. It's not raining outside, but I feel like it should be because that would fit perfectly with the mood from Saturday's latest shit show. Unfortunately, friends, water is wet, the sky is blue, and Town still can't beat a promotion rival. Grimly predictable what happened with fans back at the weekend, unfortunately. And that's my email just going off. I'll have to turn that off shortly. Apologies for that. But back this week, after a week off from the podcast, fired up and ready to go, I'm sure. Stuart Watson, how are you?
Yeah. Well fired up.
Stewie, before we get on to the miserable business of football, how's Christmas arrived in the Watson household? How excited is young Aya? What are you eating currently in terms of Christmas snacks?
The food carnage is yet to come. I'm still being good on that front. The decorations are up and have been for a while. I think most people have gone early this year.
Yeah.
Little Aya, in answer to your question, is currently sat downstairs and is off school today with a stinking cold. And I'm solo dadding whilst working. She's under strict instructions to stay glued to her iPad while I chat to you boys. And right on cue, she's shouting up the stairs. So if there's any interruptions today, apologies.
Do you need to go and check what's going on?
No, you're all right, mate. Carry on. Talk about yourself.
Rossi, how are you, my friend? Has Christmas arrived in the Halls household? You're currently sitting on your bed. There's a dream catcher behind you, a very fetching little red dream catcher. How's things?
It's good. I'm not naked on the bed. Do not worry. You can see me and I'm...
I can confirm that, well, I can tell that you've got clothes on your top. I'm not sure about your bottom, but please. No, I didn't need to see that. Have you got, obviously, I know your decorations are up because I've seen it in the videos you've been doing. What is the state of play in terms of Christmas in the Halls household?
Well, Sasha has been my girlfriend, if people didn't know that already. She's already got all the Christmas food sorted. That's all in, you know, in the freezer, ready to go, you know, turkey and all that jazz. So, she's very prepared. Presents are... I've actually done my Christmas presents really quickly this year, which is normally I'm last minute guy. Christmas Day. No. Presents are... I've just got to wrap them, basically.
Boys, what is your particular weakness when it comes to the Christmas food? I am a sucker for the peanuts. I can go through an entire jar of peanuts. You know, it's like big things of peanuts you get this time of year. I could smash one of them half, you know, in about an hour or so. It's very, very bad for me. But what about you? Roscoe, are you more of a sweet man? Obviously, we know you're a Jaffa Cakes man.
Yeah, so, you know, celebrations, Quality Street, all that. Roses. Of course, last week I announced that I got my nan's Christmas cake.
Yeah.
That's already gone.
Oh, wow.
So she's made me another one. So that is coming very soon. So I'm looking forward to that. But just a lot of sweets and chocolate and all that, which is... not good for the belly, but it's Christmas, whatever.
It's good. It's good for the soul. Watson, yeah. We know you're an emotive eater. What are you mainly eating over Christmas?
Tubes of Pringles will be consumed. Last year, I stumbled across the Oreos that are kind of dipped in white chocolate, coated in white chocolate. They're dangerous. Just all the good stuff.
I can't wait to get properly involved in that. Obviously, we're not far away now. Boys, I suppose we better talk unfortunately, about football. We spoke last week, me, Roscoe and Hutchie spoke on the Wednesday about this potentially being, well, Hutchie said it was the biggest game of Lambert's Town career. I said it was the biggest game Town played since the playoff semi-finals against Norwich because of the possibility for Town to turn things around, play in front of their own fans, finally beat a promotion rival and really kick things off and get going. Sadly, of course, that didn't happen. They were 2-0 down at half time, as we kind of talked about, and we had some boos. Also, as we kind of predicted and talked about, half-time boos and then full-time boos. Stuart Watson, it's depressing, it's predictable, and it's just shit. Your thoughts, please.
Running out of things to say about all this, really, because I feel like we're just kind of going round and round in circles with it all, aren't we, to be quite honest? Major caveat with the injuries, of course, before I start sounding like the manager, that is a fair comment that they are without some big key players at the moment. Norwood, Downs, Vincent Young, their best players from last season. I think it's left the side looking pretty unbalanced. I thought the midfield looked short of a bit of steel, a bit of physicality. They're very high on technical players at the moment, but I mean, Paul keeps talking about doing the ugly side of the game. He talks about sort of going back to basics and just competing first and foremost and earning the right to play. I don't think they did enough of that on Saturday. But it's still a deep squad. It's still a squad that has more resource than most at this level. That's why you have a squad to cope with moments like this. And you still look through that team and it's still Caden Jackson, who cost 1.6 million and had offers from Bournemouth. It's still Alan Judge, an international footballer. It's still Stephen Ward, Premier League. It's still, you know, you could go through that team. It's still a reasonable team, and it should be more competitive than it was against Portsmouth, because they were 2-0, could have been 4-5, well beaten, very disappointing.
And whilst Stu goes off to tackle the solo dadding issue, Roscoe, you were there, obviously. Fans were back. That was the big difference this game. You were speaking to them before and afterwards. What was it like having fans back, first of all, and what did you make of the entire game?
I'll go to the game first. Meh. Mm. But I'll let Stu say what he said on the game, and then, you know, I'm sure you've got comments from fans. But yeah, having the fans back was just fantastic, you know, to walk on Portman Road, seeing people in blue. Of course, it's cold now, so a lot of people have got the coats on over the tops. But then people do the trick where they have a few lads on and then they have the Ipswich Town top over their coats, which is what I used to do, because you want to still show the blue. But yeah, just seeing fans there, I know it's only 2,000, but it still brought a bit of an atmosphere and it felt like there was actually a game at Portman Road. You know, of course, the chants and the claps, everything, and of course the boos, and half time and full time were back. But just as a whole, it was just good to see fans back. And yeah, unfortunately, on the pitch, it wasn't as positive.
Yeah, it was really nice, wasn't it? And well, I mean, I say unexpected. It was really nice to see that the players get clapped onto the pitch, and even Lambert got a good reception when he walked out, which maybe was not what I expected. So the fans were clearly there. They were fired up. They're ready to get behind the team. But I saw in your post-match video, one of our game day people, you met outside the stadium afterwards, said it was great to be back, but unfortunately there was just nothing to get behind. There was nothing up top. There was nothing in midfield, and there was nothing in defence. And that really was the story of the day, wasn't it? Stu, are you back with us?
Yeah, you're fine, mate. I can multitask. I'm hitting mute when I need to. You're fine. Yeah, I think on the subject of the fans, great to have them back. I got a real sort of a warm, fuzzy feeling. She's just letting everybody know she's got two baskets in her Peter Rabbit game. So,
I think we've lost you. Oh, he's back. Yeah, he's back.
Sorry, I just had to shout out there. This is a shambles. I apologise. I think the fans do. It was great to see them back. Really nice. And I think they all genuinely turned up with a sense of goodwill towards the team and a desire to be positive and to want to back the team. And that showed when the teams came out for the warm-ups. Really warm applause for the players, big smiles on their faces. You could tell that they got a buzz off of that. And then Paul Lambert kind of emerged a few minutes after the players, and you think, what's the reception going to be like here? But really good, warm reception for him. Applause from the south stand where he emerges. He sort of reciprocated that with some applause above the head. So there can't be any complaints there from the management or the players in terms of people wanting to get behind them. But we always have this conversation about whose responsibility is it to lift who. And I think the fans do their part at the start. And then the onus is on the players to give them something to get behind. And that didn't really happen, to be honest. They had one chance, really, of note in the first half when Dobra had a chance inside the box. And that really was it for the game. And I felt even up until that Dobra chance, Portsmouth, I thought, from the very start, looked like the better side. I know Paul says, apart from the first 15 minutes when we played well. I mean, even inside that first 15 minutes, Portsmouth had chances. And I thought the die was cast fairly early on in this game. Familiar tale. Once, as soon as Ipswich come against a better side in this division, they come up short. Defensively, they come up short. The two goals were, yes, the first goal was really well worked from Portsmouth's point of view, but poor marking. The second goal is a routine long ball, lose the header. They're quickest to the ball, 2-0 at half time, and that was game over. I said to Andy as we were approaching half time, if they score a second here, that's it, we're done. And the second half was, you know, a classic case of just the game drifting. Portsmouth were well organised. Ipswich had no answers to it. When a team parks sort of two banks of four behind the ball and are well organised, they're too ponderous, they're too slow, the way they move possession. I thought there was a moment that kind of summed it up where Ipswich had a spell of possession in the final third, but just didn't ever look like they had the creativity or the ideas to break them down. And I think it ended with Alan Judge sort of curling a shot from long range that the keeper punched away. But the same old sort of frailties from front to back, which ultimately ends up with them well beaten by one of the sides that are up there. And those stats about not beating the better sides are abysmal, to be quite honest.
Mm. You wrote, in your Stu Says piece, you referred to the goals were slick, but the defending was slack. That was slick, Stuart Watson. The record, as you say, is abysmal. We'll take a few thoughts from the KOA army because we've had a record number get in touch. So I'll just drop these in every now and then because I want to get to as many as possible. Nigel G, friend of the show, NHS hero, says, I'm running out of things to say now. It's like Groundhog Day. We're too slow and there's not enough bodies getting forward to support attacks. We hardly ever test the opposition keeper. We're too slack at the back. I'm getting seriously worried about how this season will pan out if the Lambert boy stays, making reference there, of course, to Steve Evans and his little nickname for Lambert. Peckham Blue says, we're a rotten and spineless club, just boring. I'm going to avoid all investment financially and emotionally as that helps. Joe Fares says, Ladessa, my friend of the show. Why isn't Lambert setting us up to try and win these games? He isn't going to get the chance to see out his philosophy. Do you think the reaction from fans in the ground will have made any difference to Marcus Evans' thinking? That's a good question, Stewie, because we said before, Marcus likes to take the temperature of the fans by the reaction in the ground. Obviously, he's not been able to do that for some time. This is the first game he had the chance to see how the fans feel about the team and Lambert in particular, and obviously they made their feelings known. Do you think that will influence Marcus's thinking in any way at all, Stewie?
I think it will, yeah. I think it might surprise him and Paul potentially. I think I think they've underestimated the mood music and how fed up everyone's feeling about all of this. Paul started his press conference prior to this game by kind of having a little off the record discussion with the media guys present, talking about, you know, where would you expect us to be in the table at this time of the season? We're third. And you know, I feel like I've had this conversation with Paul a few times. It's not about where you are in isolation now. If this was the first season after relegation and Ipswich had the sixth now, but had they been third with the injuries that they'd had, then there would have been a huge amount of goodwill there still. But it's not. It's the second season on. This is for Paul now. This is season number three after a fairly limp relegation took over in the November, you know, the same sort of time that Mick McCarthy took over and managed to keep Ipswich Town up from, and they went down without a whimper. And that was kind of all accepted because he got a free pass because of the squad that he inherited. And there was also a sense that he was doing some good PR work and was trying to build a brand of football. Now, all that kind of seemed to go in terms of the style and the identity went out the window in season one in League One. And they've ended up finishing 11th. And forget about the points per game method. They would have finished there, around about there. No doubt about it, because it was relegation form from October onwards. So you've got relegation. You've got an 11th place finish in League One. So then to be bleating about negativity and be surprised at sort of the feeling around the club at the moment, I think is naive in the extreme. You've had so many passes of goodwill now from the media, from the wider fan base. You know, there's only so long that people can kind of keep hitting the reset button and sort of going, right, okay, we'll try again to get behind this, because there's just been so many false dawns, so many disappointments. And it's not about where Ipswich are in the table. It's about where they've come from and more importantly, where they're headed. And I think everyone can see a mile off the way that this season is going and the way that it's all unfolding. You can go through so many stats about how many points from the last X number of games. And you can go back whether you want to do it over the last 10, whether you want to do it over the last 40 odd. The stats are all telling you this is only heading one way.
I'll take a few more thoughts because, as I said, we've got so many. Tom Rumsey says, it just feels like, what's the point? There's nothing to suggest Lambert will take Ipswich forward. There's nothing to suggest Evans will change it and repeat. Brad says, my gripe with Lambert is doing plan A over and over again with the injuries we've got, yet expecting the same result. You have to adapt to injuries. Also bringing Drinan on because he needs minutes is just crazy, as though he's not bothered about winning the game. Kevin says, it was fantastic to be back. Such a shame what I witnessed. Remember when Marcus told us you don't get to see the bigger picture on iFollow? When in the flesh, it's much worse. I've seen more penetration in an asthmatic tortoise. So Kevin's clearly been watching some very niche videos online. Dimmy says, a point overlooked, our old friend Dimmy from the live show, a point overlooked is what happens next year. We remain in League One or are promoted. I would be concerned with the current team management form and tactics. If promoted, we'd be relegated soon after. The lack of consistency against stronger teams is a huge concern. Then he amends that and says, actually, we do have consistency. We consistently do not win against them. I mean, League One next season, boys, this is a valid point as well. If Town don't go up this season, you look at some of the sides towards the bottom of the Championship at the moment, Sheffield Wednesday, Derby, Nottingham Forest. League One next season could be a bear pit, a snake pit in terms of the amount of big sides there and the chances of getting out of it. And obviously, you've got the salary cap thrown in there as well. A big concern. Matt Thomas, friend of the show, says, with Marcus showing clear support for Lambert disregarding not only journalists but also fan views, and now Chambers laying into fans at the end of the game, can it get much worse? I'm still paying for 3 season tickets each month and I'm now wondering why. That's something we should also mention, of course. Olivier Sullivan, one of our news colleagues, was in the crowd and did a piece for us and reported that his lasting memory of the game will be Chambers getting into a slanging match with fans. Who would obviously shout something not too pleasant at him, which clearly is not nice. But Evans had Chambers had a bite back, was sort of pointing fingers and getting quite angry with them. Roscoe, you were pitch side as ever. Did you say anything like that? Any kind of players? Was there any kind of sense of fans getting on players' backs particularly? Or
not that I could see, but you know, obviously fans were, you know, and you know, doing different chants and stuff, and you know, when we're about to attack and then we foul the attack, and fans just like, you know, go, yeah, of course we've, you know, we're fucked up basically. And you know, yeah, a few people go, oh, for God's sake, what a bad pass, or you know, Lambert saw it out and all that. And of course, at full time it was boos and Lambert out and stuff, so you know, even with just two, as I said, at full time, the stadium was pretty much empty when the full time whistle pretty much went. I was actually, I had to do my Roscoe Reacts, of course, part of the game day, and I thought there was going to be still fans in the ground when I finished it. When I looked up, everyone was pretty much gone, and I thought, oh God, I'm probably going to miss all my game day people outside. They're probably gone now, but luckily they were out there, and I just want to say a big thanks to them. But yeah, not a good game.
You've said before, recently, you've said that the players haven't been as vocal in recent games. Obviously, we talked before about Chambers being very loud and Stephen Ward as well. Is that still the case? Was that the case on Saturday? Were the players vocal at all? Or
not really, to be honest with you. Like, Lambert was vocal for the first 5-10 minutes, and then I felt, basically, when we went 1-0 down, it just went silent. The whole stadium was like a morgue. And it's no disrespect to the fans. I think they just had nothing to cheer about, really. They enjoyed being back in the stadium for 10 minutes because, you know, live football for the first time in 9 months. You know, of course, you're going to clap the players on and all that. But when you see what's been put in front of you, you just, what can you be positive about? What can you sort of cheer on? Mm. But yeah, the players, you know, there's moments where players, you know, they do the standard comments saying, you know, oh, you know, space, pace, over there, and all that. And, you know, Chambers, I heard him say a very naughty word, but I won't repeat. But yeah, it was, they weren't as vocal. Chambers isn't as vocal as he normally is. I think he's just frustrated most of the time. That is what the most vocal he's about, is just his frustration.
Yeah.
But yeah, just a frustrating game of football to watch. And as a fan, it's not great viewing.
Yeah. A question from Mark Rogers, one of the KA Army, says, can we now run in front of the dugout with our fingers in our ears? Making a reference, of course, to the players' celebrations from earlier in the season, seemingly suggesting that they're above criticism, perhaps. Stewie, one of the big kind of moments in this game was when Lambert had the opportunity to change things and perhaps throw on another striker and didn't. Obviously, he brought on Drynan, which is tremendous. That's the right move. But clearly, what did you make of that? Because obviously, the fans, that was one of the moments where the fans really decided to boo and get on the decision.
Yeah. If I'm trying to see it from Paul's point of view, him saying about we can't afford any more injuries and Caden's missed a lot of football, be it through injury or the COVID situation earlier in the season, he needed to come off. Okay. I would have quite liked to see Hawkins and Jackson as a pair because I think they've got the makings of a partnership. You know, Ollie winning the flick-ons and Caden's pace in behind. You look back at the previous two games and Ipswich were transformed when they went to two up front. The Oxford game, they suddenly looked like they might have half a sniff of scoring when Hawkins came on and won a series of flick-ons. And then certainly Plymouth, a big part of that game-changing was when it went to those two up top. So you would imagine that off the back of those two games, that would have been the go-to move, chasing a game that you're behind in. I'm not necessarily advocating that from the start. I think, you know, they've made it clear that they want to work on have a proper plan A and an identity. And I think it's only fair to acknowledge that that's what we were all calling for at the start of this season, to kind of pick a system and work on it. And that's fine. But we've kind of gone, as we said before, from one extreme to another, from kind of flitting between formations and personnel from week to week to now being so steadfastly stuck to it that there was, you know, obviously Paul's talked about them being useless with two up front, which I just thought, again, that was a strange thing to kind of rule out so many different formations by just saying you're useless with two up front. You're 2-0 down in a game, there's half an hour to go. Ollie Hawkins is going to be absolutely chomping at the bit to come on against a club that I'm sure he'll want to prove wrong for letting him go in the summer. And you turn to Aaron Drynan because he needs game time. I know one of the listeners you had kind of said about that, almost as if that's kind of, you know, you give people game time in the 23s if they're coming back from injury and they need to get up to speed, not just as a kind of a gift for the final 30 minutes in a game against the top six side that you're trying to chase. So Paul sort of says, well, you know, I don't want us to become a long ball side. I don't want us to lump it up long to Ollie. But yet 10 minutes later, he does bring on Ollie Hawkins and he does go to two up front. And that by that point, another 10 minutes of the game has gone. So I'm struggling to kind of see all the logic behind Paul's thinking with those substitutions and the timings of them, I have to be honest.
We'll take a few more thoughts. Connor Hume says, Danny Cowley is so impressive. Lambert's going nowhere and has had 2 years. Get Cowley in. ASAP Blue Soap says the reception for Lambert was okay before kickoff. The fans wanted to believe this green shoots crap. Contrary to popular belief, he was solidly booed afterwards. The happy clapping was for Dobbs, Cornell, who are okay. We have some talent, just need a manager who can actually manage. I mean, in terms of bright spots from the game, Dobra, Dizelle and Cornell were all okay, weren't they, Ross? They had decent games.
Yeah, Cornell, I think the game itself could have been, you know, a bigger scoreline, really, if it wasn't for the crossbar and, of course, Cornell making a few saves. Of course, Dizelle, I think he always plays a decent game. Always good to have him back after his suspensions. And yeah, Dobra, once again, he just loves to play, doesn't he? He just loves the ball at his feet. He wins a lot of free kicks. He spends most of the time on the floor, but it's because he's a target, isn't he? Because I'm sure big defenders and midfielders will target him and go, you know, we've got to take him down and make sure he doesn't get past us. Yeah, that was really the only light, really, of the game. It was good to see Dobra get an opportunity to play again, start again, and he had a few shots himself. But yeah, that was the only really positive take from it. You know, Dobra again playing really well.
I saw someone suggest in the aftermath of the game that the crossbar was actually Town's man of the match, which gives you a little insight into how bad it was, perhaps. And Kenny Jackett, obviously the Pompey manager, said afterwards he thought they could have scored a lot more goals, which is never good to read. Chris Peach says another drab performance with very little fight. I noticed whenever we had a throw-in, no player wanted the ball. And the amount of time we just threw the ball up to Jackson, we lost it and Pompey went straight on the attack. Is that players lacking confidence or not playing for Lambert? L. Balaam says no movement in front of players and a complete lack of confidence. Would be interested if anyone can think of any club that has come back from this relatively low position and sour atmosphere without changing manager. FPL Tractor, am I getting very cynical, but is it a coincidence that the Cavalry are returning to play just in time for the January transfer window or for Lambert leaving, perhaps? A lot. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of comments along the same sort of lines. Chris London Tractor Boy, I know we've got a lot of injuries, but this team should still be good enough to perform. I'm not expecting to win every week. I'd expect to win most weeks with a fully fit squad. But we just lack attacking threat, urgency, creativity and confidence. That's all down to coaching. Post-game, Stewie, obviously, there's been a few different Paul Lamberts post-game this season, notably the very angry one at Oxford, which you tackled. But in terms of his post-game comments, at least, he seemed kind of more accepting of the fact, maybe for the first time this season, that what happened on Saturday wasn't good enough. And he mentioned harsh words in the dressing room quite a few times. What kind of mood was he in after the game?
Yeah, we had sort of confrontational Paul at Oxford. We had sort of cryptic Paul, which I think is probably my least favourite Paul, after the Plymouth game, where he says things like, I know what needs to change, but I'm going to keep that to myself. And when he just kind of just leaves phrases floating in the ether. And then on Saturday, we had downbeat Paul. It was like a little bit, Ross said, sort of first 5-10 minutes. He was back to sort of bouncing around in the technical area, clearly sort of feeding off the fans. But it's like a little bit of fire sort of went out in him as during the game, and that sort of continued post-match. Just a real acceptance. At least there was no kind of, we're playing really, really well. We're playing, you know, that was the stuff that was, I think, irking people earlier in the season. Just a complete acceptance that we were second best. We didn't compete enough. There's been some harsh words exchanged. They were in the dressing room a lot longer than they usually are. We're back to kind of not quite as long as the Lincoln 5-3 lock-in from when was that, January time, Christmas time last year. But we're back to that part of the cycle where players are getting sort of staying in the dressing room, and by all accounts they all kind of have their say and go round the houses remember Luke Wolfenden sort of reflecting on that Lincoln locking, just saying it got to a stage where I thought, all right, give it a rest, boys. We're not really getting anywhere with this. You know, we're all just saying the same things in different ways. So, but yeah, Paul was, I thought, a little bit sort of downcast by it all. Was trying to say the right things about what we need to do next, but he knows it wasn't good enough.
And interestingly, kind of on that topic, obviously Stephen Ward said after the game that the players had all had a chat and they have to start afresh on Tuesday, which obviously, you know, in isolation, that's kind of what you want to hear from your players, that they're all talking together and accepting it's not been good enough. And but the problem is we've heard it so many times now, it's just kind of words, isn't it? And I know, you know, they can't really say much extra, but we just obviously we have to see some kind of evidence of that on the pitch. And you spoke to Mark McGuinness this morning as well, Stu, who had a kind of, we have to take responsibility sort of take on things, didn't he?
Yeah, first thing I'll say about Mark is I'm so impressed by him as a character. As a 19-year-old lad, speaks with real maturity. Slightly surprised to see that he was the one kind of put up to do press this morning. I think it's telling that we're not really getting the Luke Chambers and the Alan Judges and the more senior players sort of doing press as much this year. I think Luke's only done it twice, actually, and we're a third of the way into the season. So that, to me, is another sort of indictment of kind of people needing to take more responsibility about the situation. But Mark spoke, really well about sort of, you know, basically it's easy for everyone to blame the manager, but we're the ones out there on the pitch that need to do it and do better. And that is, we've talked about this on the pod before, that is quite looked where it's the big discussions about the ownership and about the manager, that ultimately, if you look at the 11 players that go out there on the pitch, putting everything else aside, should they be doing better on a lot of occasions? I would argue that, yes, they should. I think, I don't know, it's coaching obviously plays a big part in it, both in terms of the way the team's set up and man management. But even with the injuries, I don't think it's unfair to expect more. You know, they're losing. We go back to it. We talked about it being a big six games that could shape Ipswich Town's season. And I think I did a sort of some predictions going into it. And I said 2 wins, 2 draws, 2 defeats, which I said would be sort of leave more questions. They've ended up with a point less than that, with 7 points, and have only scored, 4 goals in those games, 2 of them against 10-man Plymouth, 2 against Shrewsbury, which never looked like coming, one of which was an own goal. It's not good enough, is it?
No, absolutely not. Take a few more thoughts before we move on. Mac O. The Mills said, it's sad to admit, and this is a worrying thing because I'm seeing this trend kind of increasing, but worse than being infuriated with the state of our club, I've now become kind of apathetic. That's really depressing. I didn't even bother listening to the last 3 games, and that's unthinkable up to this season. That's always, for me, when fans start going past anger into just apathy and not caring, that's a major red flag. Sam Chapman said, it was like I'd never been away on the pitch. Last game I went to was Coventry. We could still be out there and still not look like scoring. No hiding place now for either Marcus or Lambert. Mike King says, how long can this be allowed to go on? If I could see we were playing well but just not getting the breaks, I could just about accept it, but we're not and I can't. Vincent Bird, a stubborn manager who's taunting fans with awful tactics. The chairman is overseeing a plunge to new depths of that sadness, yet they tell us they have a good plan. Mick Lumley says, I feel Ipswich Town now are basically just a piss poor tribute act to the club they used to be. He says, scrap that. They're not a tribute band. They're football's version of Weird Al Yankovic, taking delight in mocking my memories and dashing my hopes. I'm so effing angry, he says. So, yeah, I mean, that is generally the tone. Harry Marcham, Stu, says, best wishes to Stuart and Andy and Ross, having to cover this team for a living. At least you get paid to go to the games, boys. Other people are paying to go and watch them.
There's a couple of points in there I'll pick up on. I think when people are talking about the sort of the memories of the club it used to be, and sometimes within the club it's quite often spoken about the sort of the glory years sort of being a millstone around the neck of this club. And, you know, it's not, Paul's often spoken about, you know, the 78 and 81 is a long time ago now, and it's not the same club. Forget that era. I'm 35 years old, and I don't remember that era. So you've got a generation of fans now that if you're under the age of 30, you can barely remember the fifth place finish in the Premier League. You can barely remember the sort of the fun of those Burnley years, let alone the ancient history that's come before that. That's the yardstick that I think Ipswich are kind of being held against now. I don't think anyone's got any delusions of grandeur about Ipswich have got a divine right to be a Premier League club or anything like that. So I think sometimes that gets overstated about sort of the expectations being too high because of the Walks and the Mills and people like that. I genuinely don't think that is the case. And the other point that going back to someone said earlier, will Marcus kind of, will the mood within the ground affect Marcus? I think what will affect Marcus sinking more is about how many people stop paying their season ticket direct debits. Now, they sold around 9,000 season tickets, remarkably, in the middle of a global pandemic when people didn't know when they would come back. I'm still staggered by that. Mm. But I tell you what, that number won't be anywhere near 9,000 now. A lot of people will have stopped paying purely because they might have been expecting to get back in the ground earlier than this, and it might be because of COVID reasons, but there will be a lot of people now that have probably just stopped paying because of how they feel about the club. And you're right, the big dangerous emotion here is apathy rather than anger. And I feel like we've gone back through an anger stage. And the minute you start getting to the point where people are not that bothered anymore, and this is a dangerous time because of COVID, because of people not being able to engage with the club in the same way. People have found other things to do on their Saturdays. And that's, I've seen comments from people going, you know, I've been a season ticket holder for 30 years and I prided myself on not missing a home game. And I used to travel back from holidays so I wouldn't miss a game. And when those sort of people start finding different things to do and an acceptance that actually this doesn't have to be their life anymore, that's a really dangerous situation for this football club.
Yeah, I mean, from my personal experience, I have obviously a lot of friends who are Town fans, and I would say at least half of them, when I speak to them about Town now, just say they're not interested, they're not following the team, they won't go back until things change. It is a real worry from that point of view. Boys, any other notes from the game before we move on and maybe do something a bit lighter to throw some light amongst all this depressing shade which you seem to be talking about most weeks at the moment? Any other notes, Roscoe, from the game?
I think we should move on and hope for better.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to something a bit lighter, Ross, because on Friday night, you broke new ground on our Instagram channel. You hosted the first live strike on our Instagram page. That's Kings of Anglia on Instagram. You should be following that. If you're not, why not? The only acceptable reason is if you're not on Instagram. But you hosted a live strike. We were hoping, thinking, we could see more history with Azza Boom becoming the champ. But as it turned out, it was the worst defence of a world title since Anthony Joshua got knocked out by a fat man because he only got one question right. Talk us through it. Tell us what happened and who won.
Yeah, it was a good experience for myself, trying to not butcher names and just, you know, say naughty words. But yeah, Azza Boom, disappointing you. One question right. Just one. Unbelievable. But yeah, there's four.
Only
there was,
one.
Yeah. There was three other people, of course, competing for him. He, you know, Azza Boom took on to defend his crown first. One question needs to get right. So someone had to beat basically one. Luckily, someone did. Tyler. I don't know what his name was. Taylor Tyler. I don't know how he says it. He got three right, and then next guy only got two, and then Luke Penning, who a regular person on this podcast, of course, who does comments and stuff. He then won. He got three as well with Tyler. So it was a tiebreaker, which I was not wanting. I didn't want a tiebreaker. That is the worst for any quiz, having a tiebreaker. And I did have a tiebreaker, and Luke won. So he is the new strike reigning champion.
Well, the new champion, Luke Penning, yeah. Attender of the first KOA Live, and now champion, reigning champion of the strike. Hopefully, as we said before, KOA Live is coming back a week on Wednesday, 23rd of December. Hopefully we'll get Luke versus Azaboom as part of that strike on that live show. And what a way to set us up for Christmas, a battle of the titans for the strike title and other people, obviously, as well. We may have a new champion. That'd be tremendous. But boys, let's do a Mark's Big Question as well. Roll that intro music.
Big question.
Right then, boys, in the spirit of everything we're talking about, this week's question is, what are you the worst at in the world? Obviously, Town are worst at beating teams that are around them in the playoff race. They're terrible at that, unfortunately. But what are you the worst at? I'll start because it's sort of Christmassy themed, my answer to this. The thing I'm worst at in the world is probably wrapping presents. I'm dreadful. I get covered in sellotape. They look like a dog's been at them afterwards. There's bits usually sticking out. I use way too much paper. I went through a period of using tinfoil to wrap up presents. Such was my complete lack of ability in that regard. Another thing I'm really bad at is DIY. I have a rule I've said generally, if I can pay someone to do it better than I can, that's what I'm going to do. I've not had any major DIY disasters, but I just know if I was to get too ambitious, I'd probably burn the house down. So, Ross, obviously you're brilliant at most things, but what are you worst at? And don't say pronouncing names, because obviously you know that's the easy cop out. What are you worst at in the world?
It's not Christmas themed, but my handwriting is dreadful. I've tried my best to improve it every year, but it's just, you just can't read it. Like, pretty much my 7-year-old niece has got a better handwriting than me. I'm sure Stu's daughter has probably got better handwriting than me as well, because mine is just, I don't know why, I just can't improve it. And of course, nowadays, you don't really write as much, do you? With pencils and pens. So it doesn't, you know, I don't do it that often, but yeah, handwriting is not good. And my spelling as well, it's not great either. So pretty much the key things you need in life to succeed. Yeah,
writing arithmetic. The other thing I'm really bad at on a kind of scholarly point of view is geography. My geography is dreadful, especially in this country. I've got no idea where counties are, where places are. I am a buffoon in that respect. Stuart Watson, you're a buffoon in no respect. You're extremely wise and talented, but what are you dreadful at? What are you worst at?
I'm just making a mental note about your geography, because I might be able to squeeze a few more miles through on expenses. I just tell you that, Northampton, that was quite a long journey, or Peterborough at the weekend, might stick another 100 on that.
Yeah.
At this very moment in time, I'm failing at parenting, because I've just swatted my daughter away, who's saying she's hungry. I've told her to go and open a couple more doors of her advent calendar. just do that. Keep the wolf from the door. I'll sort you something out properly in a minute. I'm particularly bad at being decisive. I'm a very indecisive person, and I hate myself for it. It's my New Year's resolution every year, but I can't get around it. Maybe that is the crux behind all my rhetorical questions that I ask myself all the time. I'm an overthinker.
You are. You're also, I'd say on that note, Stu, you're quite suggestible as well, because you're quite indecisive. If someone comes down strongly on one side of an argument, you'll just go, yeah, I agree. So that's frequently been a situation we've been faced in. How is Aya? You say she's been sent off to the advent calendar. So that is a treat in itself.
I've no idea. I'll find out in about 10 minutes' time.
Dear, oh dear. Right then, boys, let's move on. Mark's Big Question. We've all learned a bit more about each other, and let us know on Twitter what your worst at in the world, KOA Army. Something that happened after we last spoke, literally a few hours after we last spoke on the podcast, which was frustrating because it would have been good to talk about it last week, was Marcus Evans came out and apologised for using the phrase, "be careful what you wish for," in reference to the state of play at the club and how he won't be swayed into getting rid of Lambert. For me, the apology was the right thing to do. I don't think there's any shame in saying sorry, acknowledging you've made a mistake in saying sorry. Obviously, you probably shouldn't have said it in the first place. But what did you make of that, Stu? The big man coming out and saying, I shouldn't have said that.
I always think an apology that starts with for any of those who were offended, I apologise type vibe always, excuse me, feels a little bit hollow. I think the original statement probably showed a few true colours about how Marcus truly feels about the situation. I can understand maybe there's an element of fans and outsiders that are still stuck on the Mick McCarthy end game, but for that to still be at the forefront of Marcus's mind worries me, because it's now about where we move from here, not what's got us to this point. And if in Marcus's mind that he feels that looking back, he should have risen above popular opinion and trusted his gut and stuck with Mick, which seems to be the crux of what he's saying from that. For him now to go, right, I didn't do that with Mick, so therefore I have to do that with Paul, is worrying, because I don't think you can compare Paul Lambert to Mick McCarthy in terms of what he's achieved or not achieved so far. So if that's a kind of an insight into where Marcus is thinking at the moment, that worries me.
Well, I saw a lot of people saying after the apology that he shouldn't have said it in the first place, and that someone should have said to him within the club, Marcus, do you think you should say this? But of course, we've got no idea if that happened, because ultimately, even if someone did say that to him, Marcus Evans owns the football club. He's going to say what he wants at the end of the day. And he did, clearly, which we talked about at the time being a terribly misguided decision and antagonistic towards the fans. Ross, were you pleased that he apologised? Do you care?
Oh, sorry. but no, joking aside. Yeah, I think that's what he needed to do. But, you know, whoever's advising him to do these statements and adding that is wasn't a good thing to do. I'm sure it was like a smart little thing he wanted to put in there, but in the long term, it wasn't. Yeah, it was not a good idea. You know, myself, I know this is bad to say, but I don't really care about these statements, really. I'm thinking more about the results on the pitch. You know, you can say, players, managers, owners can say whatever. But what matters really is on the pitch, 90 minutes, 3 points after the game. I think, you know, that's my take on it all. Maybe it's a bad thing going into games like that, but that's just, yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on that. None of all this other stuff around the sides matters if it's happening on the pitch. Statements, fingers in ears, goal celebrations, all of that sort of stuff doesn't matter if you're winning games and you're having success. And ultimately, it all comes back to results, doesn't it? But, you know, if the plan is to kind of tell everybody that the financial playing field is going against us soon, and it's a long-term plan, and we're developing a style, and we're producing. You're essentially asking people for patience. Then all of that extra sort of stuff does matter, because it buys you some goodwill. And I feel like, you know, at a time where goodwill is running out, they've not helped themselves off the pitch at a time when they need that. But you win some games and it all gets forgotten about. But that's the concern at the moment. You can't see where the sustained run of wins is going to come from that makes all of the extra stuff go away.
Yeah, I agree with Ross. Actually, like you say, spot on. In terms of there's a lot of hot air that comes out of the club. People saying the right things, players saying we've not been good enough, and we've had chats about it. But until we actually see some evidence of things turning round and, you know, then beating the sides they should be beating in terms of promotion rivals if they want to go up. Unfortunately, I think this malaise is going to continue to hang over the club. Now then, boys, obviously, let's move on. It's Burton tomorrow night. Ipswich Town host bottom of the table Burton. One fully expects them to dispatch Burton, and we go on with this kind of lingering death of the season, where they beat the kind of lower ranked sides but then can't beat the promotion challenges around them, getting to the point almost where we'll be soon. Maybe we can't even call Town promotion challenges anymore, depending on how this continues. But Roscoe, Burton at home tomorrow. What do you reckon? Going to bottom of the table?
Yeah. Once again, it's going to be good to see 2,000 fans at Portman Roads. I don't know what they would have rather seen, the Portsmouth game or this game. Bottom of the table or a team in the top six. For me, it's probably going to... I think me and Stu spoke about this in the office. It's just going to go full circle. Full circle. Like, beat the teams below us, lose against top six, top 10, and then we'll play against another top six side, lose against them, and then people below us. But as you said, we're not going to be a promotion side. You know, if we lose against Burton, hopefully we don't, because that would be just disastrous. That would be the worst moment, I think, for us as a club to lose against a team bottom of the table. But then I looked at Burton's results recently. They're actually four games unbeaten. Three draws and a win.
Okay.
So, in a way, that's weird. They're bottom of the league, but somehow, you know, they're still four games unbeaten. So they may go into this game feeling some sort of positivity, you know, bottom of the league, but we're still getting results. But yeah, I'm not really feeling good for this one, really. I feel I'm more worried about this game than Portsmouth, really.
Mm. Stu, anything other than an impressive win over bottom of the table Burton at Portman Road is going to be a serious setback, isn't it?
They need to win. It doesn't matter how they win. This is a really dangerous game with the pressure rising, with fans back in the ground, expectation, maybe confidence low, and everyone goes, Burton, bottom of the table, got to beat them. And it's a bit of a lose-lose situation, because if they win, it's, well, you know, we're stuck in that cycle, and, you know, let's see what they can do at Peterborough. But Burton put four goals past Charlton recently, beat them 4-2. Since then, as Ross says, they're four unbeaten. They've drawn at Sunderland, they've drawn against Crewe, they've drawn against MK Dons, and Ipswich have kind of seen that Crewe and MK Dons are no pushovers either. So this might be a more difficult game than people are anticipating, and it's just got all the ingredients for it to be a tricky evening that leads to some more ill feeling from the stands. The ones that will be there are obviously going to be the next lot on the ballot that won't have been there on Saturday. I'm sure they'll turn up, as we said, you know, again, with goodwill, and they'll start, you know, the excitement will be there. It will be their first time in Portman Road for 9 months. So the onus is very much on the team to set the tone from the off. I hope they can do it, but I can't say anyone can sit here with speak with any great confidence or optimism at the moment, with the way that the season and the last few weeks have been going.
Yeah, it's worrying, isn't it, when we're talking about saying, I hope they can beat the bottom place side. And then obviously after Burton, it's a trip to Peterborough, who are very much among the ranks of promotion rivals at the weekend. So we shall see. Roscoe, should we talk about a town side that are actually winning and doing well? Because the town ladies were in action yesterday. They won 9-2. Just fill us in on the game. What was it? Where was it? Who scored?
Well, I've got to remember the goal scorers now, because there's, you know, nine goal scorers. There's someone who scored a hat-trick and some braces, so it's not like nine separate goal scorers, you know. But, it was good to see goals flying in, seeing goal threat. You know, there was zero goal threat for the men, but for the women's team, you know, they were... Of course, they had a month away because of lockdown. Unfortunately, had to stop play. They came back, you know, firing... All cylinders, basically, scored very early on. George Allen, summer signing, scored a hat-trick, a first hat-trick for the club. Natasha Thomas got a brace, as well as Eloise King. Sophie Pescott scored a goal as well. And Abby Lafayette scored as well, a bullet header from her. But yeah, they're playing Harlow Town in the FA Cup, first round proper. So then the next round, the FA Cup. Nice setup at Harlow, by the way. Nice little setup there. Took us a while to get there because there's diversions, as they normally are when you want to get to places. And the weather was very, very shit, but it is what it is. But yeah, good positive win for them. 11 goals for me to see after watching us play terribly against Portsmouth. But good all round for the women's team.
And George Allen's the girl from Bury, isn't she, originally?
Yep. Yeah, yep. So She went over to America, spent years in America for scholarships. She was previously at Arsenal. But yeah, what a player. You know, I thought Blue Wilson was a baller, but Georgia Allen's up there as well. Some promising signs and hopefully another FA Cup run for the team. I think the draw is happening today at 1:00. So by the time we come off the podcast, we'll find out who we're getting in the next round. Hopefully it's not Plymouth away or something stupid like that. So we could play Plymouth. So that is, we don't want that.
No, you definitely don't want that. When are the ladies next in action then? Is it this weekend they play again or?
Yeah, so they take on AFC Wimbledon away and they have basically a Christmas break. So just two games for them after lockdown. But yeah, AFC Wimbledon could be a test for them because they're tied, you know, fighting for promotion like town. So that should be a good game. And Natasha Thomas is one goal away for 100 goals to the club. So she could be hitting that, you know, that landmark against Wimbledon, which will be, I think she wanted that instead of the Harlow game. I think, you know, score your 100th goal in a 9-2 thrashing is probably not what you want. You want it in a very like league game and hopefully a lot of the winning goal.
Yeah. Good stuff, mate. Good stuff. Nice to see a town side consistently winning. Good to see them back in action. So yeah, look out for them. They're on Twitter, aren't they, and on Instagram and all sorts, so you can follow their fortunes on there. And obviously Roscoe is the club photographer, so he travels along with Kieran to them. Stewie, any other things to mention before we take our leave? You've got to write a talking points preview ahead of Burton. Anything else you want to talk about, my old friend?
No other business.
Oh.
I've got to go on that note. Sorry, guys.
Okay. See you later. Roscoe, anything else to mention?
No, that is it. You know, just Burton's going to be as dreadful as Portsmouth, I have a feeling. So get ready for a goalless draw. Happy days.
I hope not, because these podcasts are difficult to do. Hutchie obviously is not around today, and I think he's been struggling a little bit with motivation for podcasts. He feels like he's sort of saying the same things all the time, which I guess a lot of us are. But fortunately, we have to keep doing these because we get paid to do them and we know people enjoy them. And on the subject of enjoyment, Kings of Anglia Live, December the 23rd. It's a week on Wednesday, 7 p.m, Christmas special of Kings of Anglia Live. You have to sign up on the Zoom link, which is all over our social medias. We'll tweet again today. That's if you want to talk to us and get involved. And also, if you just want to watch, it will be screened live on Facebook as well. So you can just kind of watch and not necessarily get involved. So make sure you sign up for that. 7 p.m. December the 23rd, Kings of Anglia 3 live, the Christmas special. This time it's got bells on. That'll be very good indeed. And until then, follow us on all our social medias, obviously Instagram, Twitter, Facebook and YouTube. And also leave us a 5-star review on iTunes because it helps us greatly with the visibility in the charts. Now then, boys, let's take our leave. Ipswich Town are back in action tomorrow. Bottom of the table, Burton. Please, let's have a win and let's roll to Peterborough on the back of a win. And then we'll see what happens. We'll see you again after the Burton game, though. Have a great rest of the week and enjoy the game if you're going. Speak to you soon.
From true crime to football, Brexit to hopeful. For more great podcasts from Archon, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archon.
QTS is building more than a data center in Dane County. We're partnering with Alliant Energy to enable 750 megawatts of new renewable energy sources, supporting sustainable generation while lowering costs. We use a closed-loop, water-free cooling system that conserves billions of gallons of water each year. And we're investing millions locally, from scholarships and workforce development to nonprofits and first responders. QTS, powered by people, driven by purpose. Paid for by QTS.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.